Hey everybody, welcome once again to Tomes of Terror, my little book review series that I do on here. So, Arkansas-based author Robert Campbell was nice enough to contact me several weeks ago and ask if I wanted to receive a signed copy of what I'm assuming is his first novel for review. And of course, you know, I readily agreed because that's a very nice thing to do. So thank you very much, Robert. He actually went to great personal expense to send it to me by one-day shipping. So I really do appreciate it. And like I said, if you're an author as well and you want to send me a book or send me a link to your book if it's on Kindle Unlimited or something like that to review, then I will make every effort to do that. Although sometimes it might be a few weeks because I usually have, I have reviews like kind of scheduled about a month in advance. So the book in question is this one, The Legend of the Cove Witch. I'm sorry, there's like kind of a glare on there, but yeah, you can see that. Okay. So evidently, like according to the end note, like at the end of the book where it says the end and then it has the date, like because you know a lot of authors do that. So evidently this was finished in 2016. And also the author's note at the beginning said that this was the third draft of the book and the one that he was the happiest with. But the publication date on Google Books is listed as October 2021. So I'm assuming that he, you know, took that time to get it all together or whatever. Now, speaking of Google Books, this is a little bit weird. This novel's entry on there features the bio of another writer named Robert Campbell, who is actually an 85-year-old architect who graduated from Harvard like a long time ago and currently writes about architecture, like he's an architecture critic for the Boston Globe. So that's not the same guy. The guy that wrote this like appears, at least from his photo, like much, much younger. So yeah, I think that's really weird. That's probably just happened because Robert Campbell, like the old guy, has a Wikipedia page. So Google just pulled it off of there, I'm assuming. So just a heads up, if you go to Google Books and see this book's entry on there, that's actually not the actual bio of the guy that actually wrote this book, so I just thought I would point that out. Now, this novel, I don't believe it specifically states anywhere that it's YA, or that it's targeted toward a younger audience, but when I started reading it, that was like the impression that I got. And Robert Campbell does have children's author featured quite prominently in his actual bio, like the real one. So I'm going to assume that this was written for a younger audience. Although I will say that it does have some fairly graphic violence and a couple of really brief, not terribly graphic sex scenes. Like I said, I'm not real familiar with what's out there in YA, so I don't know what the standards are, like as far as violence or sex or whatever goes, so this might be par for the course, not entirely sure. So the beginning of the story is set in the present day in the author's hometown, so it's a real place called Magnet Cove, Arkansas, and the story revolves around a high school student named Noella McLean. And she's, at the start of the story, busy doing what most teenage girls do, I guess. Hanging out with her best friend, whose name is Brandy, working on class assignments, you know, doing school shit, and also crushing on the hot quarterback at school, whose name is Nicholas. Happily, Nicholas also returns her affection, so, you know, that's cool. He even asked her to the homecoming dance, and she's just squeezed with excitement. Noella's over the moon. She's like, my life couldn't get any better than this. And since this is a horror novel, you know that that's not gonna last, so yeah. So soon after that, though, you know, a sort of darker pall, I guess, is cast over the teenager's life. So one night, she has this really vivid nightmare in which a distant ancestor of hers, whose name is Jeanette McLean, pursues her through this, like, old village, which is a village, I guess, like, in local lore, is one that is supposedly is, like, this old village from the 17th century, I think, and, you know, they talk about it being out there, but no one's ever found it, so it's sort of like, they think it's really there, but it's, like, mythical because nobody ever knew exactly where it was. So she gets pursued through this village and is obviously very scary, and she gets rescued by this ghostly little girl whose name is Abigail. Now, Abigail warns Noella that Jeanette, who is the fabled Cove Witch, and also little Abigail's mother, I believe Abigail is about 6 years old, if I'm remembering correctly, that Jeanette is going to be coming and killing Noella very soon. And like I said, this is a dream. So Noella, just like everybody else presumably in this town, has heard all these legends about the Cove Witch, and particularly the story that Jeanette McLean, you know, the titular Cove Witch, is said to reappear every generation and murder one of her ancestors as revenge for what had been done to her like centuries ago. Apparently, nobody in Magnet Cove really believes in the Cove Witch anymore, but Noella is kind of starting to have her doubts. You know, yes, she has the nightmare, but then she's at the movies with her friends, and she has this other vision of Jeanette, where she thinks, like, the witch is, like, coming to get her and, like, grabs her arm, and after she wakes up from this encounter, she actually has, like, a hand-shaped, like, bruise on her arm or whatever. So she's like, okay, well, this shit is probably real. So it so happens that shortly after this incident, one of the teachers at school assigns a research paper, I think, like, about a historical figure or something like that, and she insists that Noella write one about Jeanette McClain. Because they're like, hey, that's your distant ancestor, so wouldn't it be neat if you wrote, like, a paper about her and about the legend that sprung up about her and stuff like that. Now, Noella, because she's had all this, like, creepy shit start happening, she's pretty reluctant to do this. Especially since she's starting to suspect that the Cove Witch actually might be real and actually might be coming to get her for whatever reason. But she can't really manage to talk her way out of it. So her and her friends decide that they're going to go visit Noella's aunt, Nettie, who I think, at least according to the author's note at the beginning of the book, is based on a real person. So I'm thinking that it's probably like the author's aunt or something like that, because I think her name was Nettie as well. He thanked her in the author's note at the beginning. So I'm assuming this is based on a real relative of his. So Nettie seems like she's something like the family historian. Like, she has, like, all of these things, like journals and, you know, documents and stuff like that, like, from all their distant relations. So she has all that stuff. And stuff about that and stuff about, like, the curse. It's supposedly that this family is cursed. Like I said, the witch is supposed to come, like, once every generation and kill one of the relatives. Now, from that point forward, the novel takes place pretty much entirely in the past, as Noella and her friends are basically, it's kind of like a frame story, like the modern day stuff, like then it goes back to the past. And so they're essentially like listening to Nettie, like laying out all of the stuff, like from the ancestor journals and the documents and things like that. So we first go back to 1691 and learn how Jeanette, who started out as this really beautiful, very decent, very pure-hearted young woman, eventually ends up like turning to the dark side. Due to a combination of this magic amulet called the Raven's Eye that her husband Gerard gives her, like, for Christmas one year, and sort of, like, her uncontained fury at this man, well, at first it's just, like, one man, but, like, a guy named Magistrate Coleman, who is kind of like Witchfinder General motherfucker, where he's just kind of like, he's been burning innocent girls, like his witches, left and right. Even though I think in this, I mean, obviously in this book's universe, witches actually do exist, so I don't know if it's implied that some of the people that he burned, like, were actually witches, so fuck them, but it's like, you know what I mean? But, you know, but some of the girls were obviously innocent, and he's getting a little too heavy-handed with the witch burning, and Jeanette doesn't like it, and so she decides to take revenge on him, and that's kind of what is the catalyst for her, like, turning evil, or, like, turning to the dark side, and also kind of, like, her lust for power, like, that comes from this amulet, which essentially, the amulet, it kind of does a thing where, well, it also has to do with, there's this tree. It's like kind of like a magical tree. It's probably like a nematon or nemeton. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. But it kind of grows out in the forest, and she gets like a lot of her power from that. But essentially, like, if you say this Latin phrase, like, whatever you want to happen, like, the amulet will kind of like make it happen. So you can, I mean, you, I guess you kind of have to like learn how to do it and shit like that. But you can use, you don't have to use it for evil though, like the amulet, like it could go either way. It's just like a magical device. Like, how you use it is up to you, kind of thing. So initially, at first, I mean, Jeanette uses her amulet for good, you know what I mean? Just, like, helping people around the town or whatever. But eventually, because she's mad at Magistrate Coleman, and then she starts getting mad at other people in the town, and starts thinking, oh, it wouldn't hurt to just, like, fuck up this person because they're a douche or whatever. And then as that starts going on, something comes up where, you know, and like I said, I don't want to spoil, like, the plot points and stuff, but she feels like there's kind of like a personal betrayal, like, by her family. So she gets so mad that she essentially, like, ends up murdering, like, a whole bunch of the townsfolk, like, in various horrible ways, including her daughter, Abigail, who is 6 years old. Oh, that was kind of accidentally on purpose, kind of like that. I don't think she actually meant to kill her daughter, but it kind of ended up like that because she was, like, raging out or whatever. So as the story goes on, we jump ahead a bit. Like, that's kind of the bulk of it. And then, like, there's sort of, like, a shorter section at the end which kind of like jumps ahead like to successive generations and like what happened in those generations. So it goes a little bit into, you know, this family was doing this and they're this relative, and then the witch came during this circumstance and fucked up this person and whatever. And then in between there's like little interludes, like where we come back to the present with Noella and the gang, and there's basically just a page where they're just kind of like, oh man, that was fucked up or whatever. And then we go back to the past again. So like I said, it's essentially like a frame story. Almost all of it, well, I don't know if it's almost all of it, but a good portion of the book like takes place in the past. Most of it in 1691, but then it skips ahead. And then like the very beginning and the very end are set in the modern day. So like at the end of the story, because you kind of knew that it was building up to this because you've seen like the witch like appearing in every generation, and obviously she's going to appear in this generation and go after Noella. So she has to figure out some way to destroy the witch, which nobody has been able to do thus far because she's really powerful, and sort of like end the family curse forever. So she has to figure out like what to do that, you know, other people haven't figured out so far. Now, I will say, I love stories about witches. I love stories about intergenerational curses. So when both of those things are cooking, like I really, really like that kind of thing. But I will say I think the main thing that let this novel down was not so much the story, which I thought was like actually really interesting and really well thought out. And, you know, it was like a good idea. Like I said, I love witch stuff, but I think it was mostly like the execution. Now, according to the author's acknowledgement at the beginning of the book, the novel did have an editor, but it doesn't, I mean, and I hate saying this, but it's like, it really seems like it didn't, because the book has a lot of like formatting and grammatical errors. Now, the most common of these were run-on sentences and sentence fragments. And that's crazy because I feel like the book I talked about last week, The House on Rectory Lane, that had a lot of run-on sentences too. What is that? Are we doing that now? Because I thought like you're not supposed to do run-on sentences. But yeah, so I've seen that a lot like in books recently, and I've just decided everybody just said, fuck it. And it's like, we're just gonna have sentences. Like, who needs periods or semicolons? We're just gonna put a comma in there. But yeah, so because House on Rectory Lane was like that too. So that was the most common thing, was run-on sentences, sentence fragments. There were also, and this is another thing that happened in House on Rectory Lane, was that there were a lot of missing dialogue quotes. So you couldn't tell when the person stopped talking and when it went back to just, you know, exposition or whatever. And also, another thing that House on Rectory Lane did was that sometimes two or more characters would be talking in the same paragraph, which is usually something you don't do because it's too confusing. Because, you know, usually if a new character is talking, you move to another paragraph because, you know, then you know this is a different person talking. When there's a couple different people's quotes in there, it sounds like it's the same person talking. So it was that. So it was kind of confusing. Also, there was kind of like real kind of like mistakes that would have been like easy to fix, like incorrect usage of T-O-T-O-O, a lot of incorrect uses of those, of and off, your, Y-O-U-R, and your, Y-O-U, apostrophe R-E. So there was like a lot of messes, that was a lot messed up. Things of that nature. So like I said, I hate saying this kind of stuff. I don't like to come down too hard on independently published authors because I'm one myself, and I know how hard it is that you can't, I mean, you know, us broke asses can't really afford to hire like a professional editor to like go through stuff. But so I'm willing to give like a lot of latitude, like if it's not too egregious, but this one really, really had like a lot, and I kind of feel like the editor probably should have caught them because it really did like kind of interfere with your enjoyment of the story, which is actually very good. I will say too that there was kind of like, I don't want to say, I don't know, like the tone of the writing seemed like it was a little bit like repetitive. It seemed like kind of a little bit maybe amateurish, and maybe that was because, like I said, that's kind of why I got the idea that it was, you know, geared toward like a younger audience. But one thing I noticed that happened like a bunch of times was that there'd be a scene where like something happened, like the witch appeared and like killed somebody or something like that. And then like the next scene or the scene after that would be somebody running to a house and saying, oh my God, like the witch killed somebody. And then they would describe it. So it was almost kind of like you're repeating the same scene over again, except this time it happened and then you were telling somebody about it. So I kind of feel like that just probably just needed to be trimmed out, because you don't really have to, it's like, you know, we already saw that happen. We don't need to see somebody like telling somebody that it happened, or you can like shorten that a little bit. Cause like I said, it's just kind of like unnecessary. It would have made the plot flow a lot better if some of that was trimmed out. Also, some of the dialogue didn't sound all that realistic, sounded a little bit stilted. And I will say, this is something that kind of stood out to me too. Like, in the sections of the book that were set in the past, there were some kind of like anachronistic phrases and concepts used. Like, sometimes like a character who was supposedly like in 1691 would be like, "What's the deal, Dad?" or something like that. You know what I mean? Whereas like somebody in 1691, I'm presuming, like, I didn't live back then, I don't know, but probably wouldn't say that. And so it was kind of like brought you out of the story a little bit. Also, here was another weird thing. There were several references in the book to like gravestones and buildings and stuff like that being damaged by acid rain. And I was like, maybe, I don't know, I'm not like a climate scientist or anything like that, but acid rain wasn't really a thing until like the 1970s, right? That was because of like industrialization and like too much chemicals being pumped in the atmosphere and causing acid rain. I thought that was like a 1970s thing. I didn't think it would have been a thing in the 17th century. I mean, I don't know, like I said, I don't know, but it was just like weird that it kept coming up. Also, I noticed a scene, and I could be totally off on this too, but like, just from my understanding, okay, so there was a scene where the characters in 1691, I think it was in the 1691 section, were celebrating Christmas, but they were celebrating it very much the way modern people would celebrate it, which I'm pretty sure they didn't do in the 17th century. I mean, the Puritans actually outlawed Christmas because of its pagan association. So you'd kind of, if you wanted to celebrate, like, people did celebrate it, but they kind of had to keep it on the DL a little bit because the Puritans were like, no, we don't like any of that kind of stuff. And it wasn't really, Christmas back then wasn't really like a child-focused gift-giving kind of holiday. It was more kind of like, let's get drunk and eat a lot kind of holiday, which I guess it kind of is. But they didn't really have the whole like, oh, kid-focused gift-giving thing really until like the 19th century. It was more just kind of like an adult-focused like bacchanal type of holiday, which is why the Puritans didn't like it, because they're like, having fun, we can't have that, like with all the drinking of food and stuff. So I don't think that the characters were Puritans necessarily, but had they been, like, the Puritans absolutely did not celebrate Christmas. You know, that was kind of one of their things. And, you know, so that was something that just stood out to me. Like I said, I could have been way off, because colonial America was kind of like all over the place with how they celebrated things. People did celebrate Christmas back then, I'm not saying that, but the Puritans for sure did not. And like I said, it wasn't celebrated anything like we celebrate it nowadays, really, other than like the feasting and the excessive drinking, which is mostly what it was. So there was that. So that was another thing that kind of like brought me out of the story a little bit, because it was supposed to be in the past and it was kind of like bringing me up to the modern day because it sounded too modern. So I will say, like, overall, you know, there is absolutely an awesome story in here, and I really, really liked, I love stories about witches. Like I said, I really, really like stories about family curses. I love that kind of shit. And I really, really liked the idea of Jeanette, the Cove Witch, being this really like saintly, gracious woman who everybody loved. And then, you know, her getting the amulet, and then her, as it goes on, like, perceiving that people in the village had wronged her or wronged others. Like, she was almost trying to, like, justify it by saying she was trying to protect others, but then it got to a point where she was, like, into it. Like, she liked, like, fucking up other people, and so she, you know, it was like a heel turn, essentially. Like, she was this wonderful person, but this amulet was maybe kind of, I don't know, I kind of got the feeling that maybe the amulet, even though you could use it for either good or evil, I almost kind of like got the feeling that it was kind of like the Ring of Power, you know what I mean? Like from Lord of the Rings, where if you had it, like, it was just, you know, the temptation to like fuck people up was just too great if you were like that kind of person. And it took like a really saintly person to not do that. And, you know, even though she seemed very saintly, you know, it still got the better of her, like, because at first she thought she was protecting people, and then people came after her, and they came after her sister, and she thought she was protecting her sister, and so she's like, well, I'm gonna fuck up all these people, like, to do it. And then, like, she just got more and more evil, like, as time went on. So I really liked that. I will say, one complaint I will say about that is I think that she, like, the heel turn was, like, too quick, like, she turned evil too fast. I kind of wish it would have been more of, like, a gradual downfall instead of, oh, I'll do a couple good things and then, ah, fuck this, I'm gonna blow their heads up. I don't think she didn't blow anybody's head up, but you know what I mean. So I thought that was a little bit too fast, but I liked that being the core of the story, you know what I mean? So I really think there's like a really good story here, and I really think the only thing that lets it down is the editing. I really kind of feel like this needed a better editor to clean up, you know, all the run-on sentences, all the sentence fragments, clean up all the quotes, like move the quotes you know, where they're supposed to be, like to other paragraphs and stuff like that, so it's more clear, like what's going on. Like I said, maybe edit out some of the stuff where the characters are telling people what just happened, because, you know, we already saw what just happened, so we don't need to see it again. So there's that kind of thing. So I'm just saying, like I said, I really do appreciate Robert Campbell, you sending me this book. I really did have a good time reading it. I really do like the witch thing and everything like that. But yeah, so that'll do it for this Tomes of Terror, and I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.